I've
Yeah.
got Messi Inter Miami that I bought thinking it was real and it turned out to be fake. I've got.
Man.
Hello and welcome to the American Soccer Analysis Show. We're back. We've had our little break. We're five games into the MLS season. There's a lot going on. Hopefully you've been enjoying the Expected Own Goals episodes on the ASA feed. I know I have been. The start of the end of sales season has probably been crazier than MLS. Gentlemen, how are you doing?
Doing just fine. Happy to be talking. A little bummed about the Rapids game, but I'm getting over it.
The funniest part of that is that you don't have to specify the game. No. You can just say bummed about the Rapids and it still makes sense.
Well, I may have a few more things to say about that at the end. But.
So, straight, did Maxo break his nose? Is that what I saw?
Oh, yeah. His nose was just
okay.
Break
so
right on the bridge.
Let's talk about this now because I missed this because I was choosing to watch other sports. What happened to Maxo and why were people so mad?
So, I'll just walk through the play then. It is 96th minute, I think, at this point, maybe 95th. There is a long throw in coming into the box from the right side. Maxu goes up, a bunch of players go up. A Houston.
This is
player,
a Colorado throw in, right?
This is a Colorado throw in going towards Houston's goal. So Houston's defending right now. Maxu goes up, a bunch of people go up, and just, you know, a Houston player has his arms out, you know, trying to stay balanced, take his space. Maxu goes into his elbow, immediately goes down, hand up, holding his face, holding his head. There are about 10 to 15 more seconds where the Rapids players are actually circulating the ball, where, it's still goal dangerous opportunity. I don't think it's on them to kick it out. It should be on the ref to blow the play dead because of a head injury. They cough it up. Houston takes it the other way. We have Abubakar and Rosenberry going back to be the only two defenders. They get schooled because there's just massive confusion. Brad Smith scores. There are many, many opportunities for the ref to blow that play dead, and he elected not to, and was pretty obviously regretting it in the footage afterwards. And I'll just leave it there.
And it's like the game was finished very shortly after, like within 30 seconds, right?
They kicked it off and blew the whistle. It was the 96th minute on like 6 to 7 minutes out.
Because Ben Olsen went up to Chris Armas afterwards and was like, I am so sorry. Like he's apologizing to Chris Armas. Like that's a rarity that I see like a coach. Like he wanted no part of that bad decision by the refs.
The worst part about moments like that is like, the onus is not on the players to make yep. the like decision about someone else's safety. Like to an extent, like, yes, you are responsible for the safety of those around you. That's why endangering the safety is a red card or foul or whatever.
But it's not on the players to kick the ball out. The ref, on the ref. It's their responsibility because like, the players have competing interests. They want to score. They want to win.
Yeah. And the really awkward thing is like for the referee, when you let the team who's like in possession, like get their chance at an attack, you feel like you have to let them counter the other way, which is kind of the worst part. That's a tough one. Harrison, how are you feeling about the Sounders? We haven't talked about the Sounders much this year.
There's not a good reason for that.
how are you feeling? Because I saw a lot of people really upset about the Sounders this weekend. And
well, I mean, there's a lot of reasons to be upset, right? Like you get really excited that you score a goal and then you turn around and you give up the go-ahead goal and lose the game in the same, you know, 90 seconds. That feels bad, man. It feels bad. And I mean, the other part of it is they're not even that healthy, right? I think they only fielded like something like 16 players away in San Jose. So they've really, really struggled. And even the 16 players that they had, right? I think Ruzniak was dressed, but was basically like, we're only going to play him if it really comes down to it. We absolutely need him. So that feels bad, man. But like Danny, Danny scoring goals.
Your boy, Masovsky.
Masovsky, man, like I was so excited to see him. Like it was a bad goal. I like it was a low percentage chance. Like the way that that buildup was, a header from inside the box. It was good. It goes to the far from a tactical buildup perspective. That's probably what they want to see. But those type of chances, right? What 5-6% over the course of a game? You just want to consistently see that type of stuff. But it was really cool to see him put that together and to score. I think you're going to see a lot more chances from him going forward. So that was really positive to see. Jackson Reagan getting absolutely smoked on the sideline. That wasn't great. That was yeah. That felt bad. You know, Yaimar getting left in like absolutely no man's land on the way back. Yeah, apparently having a six is like a really important thing, especially as you like transition. So, but yeah.
Listen, that is the level of tactical insight our fans have come to expect on the American Soccer Analysis podcast.
Defensive midfielder, maybe important.
Maybe important. Yeah. Look. The Sounders are going to be a team that definitely comes back and pushes for the playoffs.
You do every year.
Yeah.
Well, and even in the year that we didn't make the playoffs, it still came down to like the last week of the season. And then on top of that, you're going to get these guys healthy. Ruzniak's going to come back. Joao Paulo is going to come back. It's not like you've lost him for the season. They're just having trouble, getting healthy, you know, to start the season. And then on top of that, you also have De La Vega, right? Who's also, nursing some injuries and probably is out for where they say 2 months, I think it is, to start the season. So, I mean, those are three DPs, right? Those are your DPs. Yeah, not great, but is what it is. So they'll come back. Things will get better. It's just that we don't have a lot of Sounders fans that remember what it's like to celebrate to celebrate a not great team, right? And it's not like they don't have the players to be a really good team. In fact, all the underlying numbers they show they're being consistent, right? They're positive in their G+. So everything's there. It's just a lot of young players, a lot of injuries. And, you know, that's kind of how the ball rolls when you start the season like that. That's just how it is. I'm not worried.
Yeah, I think I saw a tweet from Mark Kastner maybe like 15 minutes ago, who's an awesome Sounders follow, who's very funny. He was tweeting out, like, here is the list of players by minutes for the Sounders last year. Look how many of these players are not playing. So that's really dramatic. I will say the not naming a full bench thing really bothers me. There is no excuse in this day and age for not naming a full bench. And I think MLS needs to, not to get all like on a soapbox here, but like, I don't think you should have to go through this stupid process of like, we're doing a temporary loan for a USL player to put a kid on the bench. Like you should just be able to fill the bench with next pro kids.
Players whenever you need. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I don't like the, I understand there's reasons for it. Like you don't want to end up in a scenario where teams are stashing players in X pro and they're playing them every game. So like the,
well, they already are. They already
exactly,
are.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, that's not new. Like you see the problem with it, allowing that quick loan, right, to happen from next pro is you have teams like Charlotte, teams like Atlanta that are throwing millions of dollars at next pro level 18-year-olds and 19-year-olds from South America, signing them to next pro contracts, which is great. I'm not in any way against that. But then you're kind of like you're milking some rules and stuff.
Maybe you have to do a special thing where there's like homegrown next pro players and they're allowed move freely unlimited times. I don't know. I don't know what the exact solution is, but like you should not be in a situation where you're not naming a full bench because you're like, well, we don't want to use one of the four call ups on this 17-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, but I think here's the other side from a Sounders perspective, right? Or from any traveling team is you go and you travel with the players that you think you're going to go with, and then if something happens, like that's just kind of how things break sometimes.
Yeah,
you're not flying you're not flying the entire 28-man, you know, team
for
down
sure
there, right?
For
so
sure.
you're leaving some kids home, you're leaving some of the players home. I think that's kind of, from my understanding, that's kind of how things developed. I don't think that they expected a couple of those players to not be able to go.
Yeah, so. I don't know. I don't know if like four players pulled out in the warm up. Like, I find that fairly unrealistic. But like, maybe whatever, they were like, we're gonna go, we're gonna roll with 18, and two guys are late scratches, whatever. But it's also like, it's Seattle to San Jose. It's an hour and a half flight. Like, it's not. I a little bit more understanding of like, you're flying Seattle to
Miami.
Fair.
That's fair. Okay. Yeah.
But I think especially home games, like there were a few home games last year where TFC didn't name a full bench. And I'm like, what are you doing? Just call up a kid. Like, they're there.
Yeah, no, so that makes sense. That's fair.
Yeah, I think the other thing is like when the next pro team is traveling to a different location than the first team, I think that is probably the biggest barrier.
This is a thing that I think is like really interesting to debate. I'm a Chelsea supporter, and like Chelsea have been a team who have like not used their academy as much as they probably should have. And their academy has been very strong. And there's a really great Chelsea account called Chelsea Youth who talks about like, okay, what's the balance between like you have a U21 Premier League game the same day or the next day or the day before a Chelsea Premier League away game? Is it better to play the game or go sit on the bench with the first team? And like the thing that always comes out is like, you can do both. Like, there's nothing stopping you from a travel perspective, especially in England, where it's like you can get across the whole country in 3 hours. But like, you might as well, like, the kid is not going to miss out on much. Like, if they miss match day minus one training with the U21s because they're sitting on the bench with the first team, like, it's the U21s. Like, it doesn't, not that it doesn't matter, but like the experience of them being involved in the match day. And okay, if they play, then they don't play the U21 game. But like, if they play, that's awesome.
Yeah, so, that should be the goal, right? It's like, cool. Mm-hmm. That worked out really well for us. We were able to leverage that opportunity for them to get experience, to understand and see what it's like at that level, and to start seeing the pace of the game. Because that's one of the big things that they talk about with the transition between leagues is the pace of the game, right? Things just happen a lot faster. So getting them in the game and getting them that experience, even if it's just a short cameo, I think is really important. Yeah.
Can't put him in the game unless you put him on the bench.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there's just like, I just wish teams were a little bit more thoughtful about how they use their next pro team players and their older academy players in relation to their first team. Like, I think you look at teams like the Red Bulls, you look at Philly, like Kevin Sullivan, who is 14 years old. Like, this is a whole thing. I don't know if you guys are like super in touch with the youth national team stuff. Kevin Sullivan is a 14-year-old who plays for Philadelphia. He is on their next pro team. He's sick. He got a lovely assist on like a crazy diagonal this weekend. He is allegedly signing for Man City. He cannot move until he's 16.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Philly have been super deliberate about his development. So like, you think about someone like that, and you think about Philly developing someone like him compared to, for example, I'll use the TFC example. TFC had Noble Akello and Jaden Nelson and Jakeel Marshall Reddy all at 16 years old in the first team. Noble Akello, they turned down a $500,000 offer from Wolfsburg, and then he doesn't play for 3 years. Jaden Nelson doesn't play for 3 years until the like they're terrible and he's just like in the deep end. And then the same thing with Jakeel Marshall Reddy, who like they had two throwaway seasons he didn't play, and now he's playing a little bit. So I think like, I just wish they were a little bit more thoughtful about these things. Anyways, that's a lot of next pro talk. Speaking of next pro, actually, last thing, Leo Afonso, Paul Harvey flagged this up in, he did like a G+ deep dive of the draft. I don't know if you guys saw that. He did a draft deep dive talking about who the best college G+ players are. And he's
like players.
Yeah. Davies players. Sorry. But just like G+ by proxy.
No, it's not. Stop
talking.
It is officially, it's a G+ projection based on event data, is what we'll call it. Or based on headline data, not event data. But that flagged up Leo Afonso,
from Virginia, who ended up going 32nd overall to Miami, and he's got like 4 goals in 2 games. He's already made a first team debut. And it's like pretty funny that you can like just cheat and not watch any games, sort by Davies, pick the top of the list, and your team's gonna be pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty wild.
So we've played 5 games. And with 5 games means we have enough stats to do some damage, but not enough stats to be very sure about anything. So we're going to play a little game. I gave the two gentlemen some homework over the weekend. Everybody loves homework. To think of one small sample size thing that we think will persist, that this is real. 5 games in, I don't care. There's only 5 games of sample. It's real. And one thing we think is not real, that is not going to stick around. Do we want to start with the things that won't stick or the things that will?
Let's go with the things that won't.
I think that's a good place to start.
Yeah.
Ben, I think if I recall, you have a good thing that's not sticking that we're all going to celebrate. Why don't we start with that one?
Yeah, folks, the dog days are over. The PRSA and Pro have ratified a referee collective bargaining agreement, and the scabs will finally no longer be scabbing. And I have a few rough, you know, referee stats are hard, especially when the powers that be are trying to obscure how bad the reffing has been. So there's that aspect. But in week 2, PRSA tweeted out probably the key stat here, which is comparing the first 2 weeks of 2023 to 2024. In 2023, there were 2 VAR interventions in the first 2 weeks. In 2024, there were 22, a factor of 11.
That's one a game.
Yeah.
There's what, 28 games in 2 weeks, right? Something like that?
15. 14 to 15.
Yeah, 14. Yeah, so that's like 20, one a game.
Yep, that's one a game. So yeah, that's pretty outrageous. I have it from our friend DJ at MLS Ref Stats on Twitter. He's been doing some back of the envelope numbers. Yellow cards, way up. Red cards, way up. Red cards for violent conduct, like almost twice as much. So refs are not controlling games. No one is happy. Like, we have been watching some miserable, miserable soccer, and it's finally going to end.
Yeah, I'm really happy for the players who, like, I think at this point were very frustrated with some of the officiating. Like, there were some comments out there. I think Christian Roldan said something. I think
Yoshida, I forget his first
name, Maya Yoshida from the Galaxy. There were a few that I think were just not great. I can't remember what coach it was. I think it might have been the assistant who was taking over for Nancy while he was sick. Was like they're trying their best. I think that I think that's a good one. I think, again, whatever, there's some quibbles about how good a deal they got, but I think the nicest thing is that the referees will be back, hopefully, by the next time we are watching MLS games. So, pretty exciting.
Yoshida is amazing for quotes, by the way. Like, oh, yeah. He does not like bite his tongue on anything. Nope. I love it. Nope. 100%. I had skepticism about him coming into this league at 35. I'm so happy he's here. He's probably the most underrated like personality in this league.
Agreed.
He was like a super respected guy at Southampton, because he was at Southampton for a really long time, and I think he did a lot of like community engagement stuff, which is pretty cool. So not surprising to see him backing a union. Fun fact, Ben, you did the same thing that I did for the pat when I was looking up stats for this, that it's the PSRA, not the PRSA, which is like the staff infection investigation research facility. So I kept typing in on Twitter PRSA, and it would be like staff infections are down, and I was like, what is going on?
Oh, so, man, I was trying to sound all smart and messing my acronyms up.
If you're looking to support the referees union, it's PSRA, I believe. And if it's backwards, this is a funny story. So you'll find out when you search. But I think that's what it was. Happy to have the referees back. I am very happy that is a small sample size thing that will hopefully never persist again. Harrison, where are we at? I heard Eastern Conference, small sample size.
Yeah, Eastern Conference, small sample size. Lewis Morgan, guys. Golden boot potential. He told some guys that he wants to compete, that he is going to brother, he has 1.25 like expected goals right now.
Five goals.
But he has five goals. There's no way. Like, it's really
not one analytic, man.
It is one analytic. Look, he's just not creating enough chances. He's not getting into the advanced position to score. You know, maybe that changes. Maybe that's something that they decide. You know, he's getting a lot of final touches, you know, and they want to push him forward a little bit. Maybe that changes the Red Bulls' tactics a little bit, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. But overall, I think that he is a guy that it's fantastic to have back. He's obviously kind of a spark plug for that team. And when he's healthy, he's such a dynamic player. He's a lot of fun to watch. But the dude's not going to score 20, 22, 23 goals like they were talking. I mean, MLS, you know, review. They Weeby had everybody drinking that he was going to – he's going to be the next, you know next guy out there in the league, next winger that's going to win Golden Boot. That's not going to happen unless something changes drastically over the next I want to say next 3 months. You're not going to see that. You're not going to see him to continue to overproduce. He's just not taking shots like he, unless they're gimmies, and you know, unless you know he's what, getting though? 15 gimmies.
I've been like actually pretty impressed with him. He's like not going to score 20 goals. No. But I think he's been like pretty good. Like Van Zier is also leading the league in assists, mostly just by passing it to Morgan, who then shoots it to the top corner. but like I've been quietly.
Funny how that happens.
I've been quietly impressed by the Red Bull. They like put Miami to the sword on the weekend. It was like a pretty comprehensive performance.
Well, the other side is Lewis Morgan had three goals against Miami, right? Like,
yeah, so,
when you're six games into it and three of your goals comes against, you know, one opponent. Team. Yeah, so, it's going to be artificially inflated to begin with.
Yeah, here's a weird thing. So he, like, has one season in his career where he scored goals. He was at Sunderland or St. Mirren in Scotland. I can't remember. But he popped off and scored, like, 15 league goals. And I don't have any XG data for that. But a Red Bull fan that I chat with every once in a while is AZNOP. He talks about Red Bull a lot. He was saying, like, I guess Red Bull fans have been really clamoring for him to play more striker because they think he can be like the little man and a big man, little man pairing.
I mean, that's kind of what they're doing.
Yeah, that's kind of what they did between him and Van Zier. And like Elias Manuel has been very hit and miss. I think he's like a bottom of the league in terms of G+ dribbling right now. But I wonder if that's something they persist with, as like the two little man strike partnership of like two guys who can press and run the channels and pass. I think that might be really interesting for the Red Bull, who are pretty good. That I think is real. That I think will persist. Yeah. It's not my projecting, but I think it's real.
We'll talk about that in a little bit.
Okay. Alrighty. My thing that I think will not persist is very pertinent to me specifically, because it's about these goddamn goalies. I need this to be true desperately.
I also watch this space.
Yeah, I think that there's basically no chance that Daniel and Galese continue to be this bad. Daniel is three goals behind his XG through three matches. He didn't play, or four matches. He didn't play the other two. Galese is 2.5 goals behind his XG. I'll start with Galese because he's like a little bit whatever. He's not been amazing historically. In MLS, he's like a little bit above average. He has a couple really terrible seasons in Mexico. There's like one season at Veracruz where he was like eight goals behind his XG in 13 games. But he's mostly been like a between zero and plus three guy a season. So like, I don't really expect him to be a minus three guy. But it wouldn't be crazy. The real one is Daniel, who like his career is like, he's an XG destroyer. He's of the games that FBref has data for, which is his last two seasons in Brazil and all of his San Jose time, he's 80 goals from 95 XG in 75 games. Which is like nuts. Like that's really good. Best. That's Matt Turner, Georgi Petrovic level. And so I was like, okay,
Like, it's small. I'm gonna go watch the video, right? Like, this is the thing we do when you don't have enough data. You go watch video to like add more data. So I watched every single shot he's faced before we got on. Here are the goals he's conceded. And this, I just want to show to you that, like, I don't think this is real. So we've got a corner that gets cleared to Yaramendi, who hits a volley through 20 bodies of traffic that goes side mesh. There's another Dallas shot that goes through traffic, kind of from a bad angle. This is the one that I didn't really like. I was like, you could have done better here. Paintsill puts one side mesh from inside the box. A cutback for Jovljic from 5 yards out. Ricky Puig tap in from 5 yards out. Another volley off a corner through traffic that he gets a hand to, should maybe save, but like, again, through traffic. Ali Ahmed puts on top corner. A free header from 3 yards out and a cutback from 6 yards out. And it's like, I don't know. It's fine. It's going to happen. He's going to make saves. And all of the games, he makes like a crazy save. So that's my thing. I think Daniel's going to be fine. I hopped into the like Quakes Epicenter Zoom or YouTube stream to go make fun of Jamin a few nights ago. after they finally got a decent performance, but with Daniel not in net for, I don't know, he was listed as out. I don't know what for. But yeah, I think if there's any Quakes fans listening, you guys are going to be fine. On the positive side, shall we start with my positive one? We'll go reverse order.
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah.
All right. So my one that I think will continue, and this is a little bit of a cheat one because the stats don't really say this, but their record does. Miami are going to continue to suck when Messi doesn't play and be amazing when he does. So they played 6 games. They played 3 games with Messi, 3 games without Messi. They're 2 wins, 1 draw when he plays. They're 1 win, 2 losses when he doesn't. They always play 4-3-3 when he plays. They always play 3-5-2 when he doesn't. Their metrics are actually like disgustingly similar across the two. Like, they have 37 shots for, 38 shots for, with and without. Their XG difference is basically the same in the two. When you look at the schedule, it's a little bit different. Like, their schedule with Messi is much harder. Like, you have RSL and then you have LA Galaxy away after 3 days where like they get killed by the Galaxy. And then without Messi, it's like DC United, Montreal, and whoever they lost to this weekend.
New York.
Red Bull. So it's a little bit, the sample size is like, that's the whole point of this. The sample size is small, but I think that's going to continue to be a theme, is that when he plays, they're great. When he doesn't, they're not great.
Do you think if the numbers are so similar, is it like really a Messi effect? Like, your performance and your execution go up when you're next to the best player to have ever lived?
I think it is. Like, it's actually really funny. FB Ref shows like goal minus XG by individual games, and the games Messi plays, they're like, they've scored like 8 goals from like 4 XG, but then in the games he doesn't play, they're like 2 goals from 4 XG or something ridiculous. So I do think that's like a real thing. Like, I think his shooting, like, he's one of the players that were like exceptionally confident as a plus finisher. And I think his passing is definitely getting people more open than perhaps the average
MLS model play would
predict. Yeah, then the XG models without defender positioning are aware.
Yeah. So it's funny because I thought a lot about this the last few days, because their record without Messi. Yeah, like you said, I'm so glad you're bringing this up because I've thought a lot about this. It's terrible. They're borderline a very bad team at times when he doesn't play, but they're going to be a playoff team. He's going to play enough to get them to the playoffs.
Yeah.
Doesn't this put them in like a really good position going into the playoffs to just all of a sudden just wreck the playoffs?
So I think it really depends how much he plays. Because I think what we've seen from their like world tour, preseason tour, and even just the evidence so far of like game and then away game or like short rest games, they can't, like, the old guys can't do it. They can't play twice in a week. It's not possible. So when we're talking about 3-game series in MLS, like, can Messi hack a Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday?
like, which is a crazy thing.
No,
to say
but he could play. He could play Saturday and then Saturday. Like,
yeah, maybe. I
think
I don't know.
The game, the best of three, I think, were also spaced a little wider apart. They might have been. Than the Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday. Like,
Leeds, I think they were. I think they were Saturday. I think they were Saturday, or Sunday.
But I thought they were like, it was like Tuesday, what, like, it depended.
It might have been.
Kind of in the middle of it. What else? I don't know. But
regardless,
it's a good point, Kieran. It's a really good point that there is going to be some congestion and stuff in that three game type series. That does make it a little bit more complex to just have a team with a bunch of old guys just completely wreck face because they have a little bit more health. And they let them rest, kind of the like an NBA type effect, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I also think there's like a weird thing to think about, like your team plays totally differently when one guy plays versus when he doesn't play, and like Messi is probably one of a handful of guys that like the talent differential with and without him is big enough that like you should do that. But I do think it's like from a squad building perspective, like do you? Like, I don't even like, so for example, like, let's think about the Yedlin trade, right? Like, they trade DeAndre Yedlin for essentially just for cap space, because they need it, because presumably they're going to go do something else with that. But like, Yedlin was actually a really nice piece with Messi because he's like a stay at home athletic fullback who can play fullback or center back in a back three. And like, if you have Messi, who does not defend at all, you have Suarez, who does not defend at all anymore. He tries, but he's like, can't run really. Like, that's
walks
a useful,
down the field.
Yeah, like that's a kind of useful piece to have. So I'm kind of curious, like from a squad building perspective, what this persisting would do. Like, do you look to add, for example, a depth attacker who can spell you when Messi can't play? Or is it like I'm getting pieces to fit around Messi, knowing that if we come eighth, but he's fit, we're going to run the table in the playoffs? Like, I don't know. It's just an interesting squad building conundrum.
It's a hard job for Tata's, but even like it's a hard job like for building the squad. But I feel like, you know, like it's hard because there are fewer decisions to make and there's such high impact. Tata's got a ton of decisions to make and they're all pretty high impact, like when to rest Messi, how to set up the team. Like if you do you want to play Messi for 50 minutes, two games in a row, or the full game and then rest? Like these are very complicated questions. And I hope over the course of the year, he will not focus on the shield, but focus on the strategy for the playoffs, how to balance the lineups, how to balance the playing loads on these older players, and how to optimize the roster game to game to game to get those strings of wins when it really matters.
All righty. Harrison, hit us with your persistent.
New York Red Bulls are absolutely killing it in the table right now. Like, forget about the fact that they're pushing to be in the top of the Eastern Conference. They sit on the very top of expected goal differential. They're sitting right now six with 2.21. I mean, they're sitting right behind, you know, Cincinnati with 2.45. Don't want to get into DC United. That's a fun conversation that we can get into in a little bit, but I don't want to go down that hole. They are so good from a G plus perspective. They are sitting right behind both DC and Cincinnati in goals added differential. This is a complete team, and like, set aside who's going to score a goal. They have so many different guys that are attacking friendly, that are so so very talented from an attacking perspective, that are going to create chances. You don't have to worry about who is the guy. They have a flood. They have a mess of guys right now. And what's really crazy is right now for G plus, their leader is Forsberg, but right behind everybody else is Frankie Amaya. Like, Frankie Amaya is coming in really hard. He's the only player so far that's played over 400 minutes in that, like, trio. And he's just throwing down, dude. Like, he's having a really, really underrated season as kind of a workman eight type. And I think that really brings everything together so that when they have, you know, Morgan at the nine, or, you know, as an undersized nine, or they have, you know, Elias Mantle up there, whoever they're going to throw at the top, whether that's one of like five different people right now, you can legitimately do it and get away with it and be a consistently good team because they have so many different talented players that don't necessarily have to be the linchpins behind as well. And, you know, Matt Doyle went into this. They're not necessarily the hoof it forward and go, go, go energy drink soccer. They are playing a very developed type of soccer to where they're looking for early chances, but they're being patient. They're showing more patience than what they have in the times past. And I think that kind of goes with some of the more developed and mature pieces that they do have in midfield. Whereas beforehand, they've been playing younger players that just completely can hoof it and can play 96, 97 minutes of just running up and down the field. Now they're playing a little bit more mature and they're playing a little bit more reserved in certain aspects of the game. And they're finding those shots and they're just dominating that shot ratio right now, and they're finding better shots than their opponents on a consistent basis. This is a team that's going to either finish in the top three. They may even finish in within shield rankings right now. This is a very, very strong team.
Yeah, I was gonna plug Doyle's like weekly roundup that he does. There's like 10 things, but there's more than 10 things,
right?
He did a really good breakdown about what the Red Bull are doing differently. I did find it funny that his first clip was like, look at all the tiki-taka they're playing. Like the clip was literally titled Red Bull Tiki-Taka. And it's like this nice intricate buildup. And then Lewis Morgan shoots it from 25 yards into the top corner. I was like, yeah, sure. Tiki-taka.
Tiki-taka the sense. I'm impressed you didn't boot it 20 yards from
us. Well, I mean, small victories, right? It's like small victories when it comes to that
yeah, culture.
Yeah, the thing that I've been mostly impressed is actually the defensive side of things, where like they have been so they've been so pressy for so long that like come the playoffs, it can be like they have not, and I don't want to criticize them last year because they were actually really good against FC Cincinnati and probably a little bit unlucky to go out. I mean, they were unlucky. They lost in a shootout. But they have struggled in the playoffs because I think contextually, like there are games and moments where you cannot press, where like it's the 88th minute and you've been pressing and you are up 1-0. Like you do not have the legs to do this properly, like sit in, be compact, blah, 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 whatever. And so far they have been like a very mid block counter team, which is a really nice string in your bow to have. Like everybody makes fun of me because I say every team in MLS and NWSL should play 4-4-2 shuffle ball, but like it is a really useful string to have in your bow.
And Frankie Amaya is second. I knew he was second. I was looking at expected goals plus expected assists. He's sitting second right now, behind Forsberg, and not by very much. So he's killing it on goals added. I really want to plug him.
Ben, I want to ask you about this because you and I have talked about like players the G plus doesn't like and figuring out mm-hmm. why.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember this, but like when Amaya got traded to the Red Bull, we like kind of unanimously panned the trade, being like, why are they giving up so much money for this like young player who had like tragic goals added? Like I think his first season in FCC was like minus 0.14 per 96. Like it was terrible.
Well, what era of FCC are we talking about there?
No, for sure. For sure, they were terrible. But I think historically, even his Red Bull seasons have not popped so much on G+. But I know like he's a player, if you talk to people with the Red Bull or you talk to people around the Red Bull, they really like him in a variety mm-hmm. of roles. So I'm curious what you see, like what is it maybe that doesn't connect about his game with G+, or like that he does right. The G+ doesn't pick up?
I mean, it's been a while since I've watched Amaya really closely, but when I think of him, I think of fast and energetic. And I think that was the case with Cincinnati. And so I think he's a system guy. Like I think Red Bulls gave up so much allocation cash. Like I think it was not much less than what they gave Miami for Lewis Morgan.
I think it was a million for
for Maya. I think it was. Maybe they like split it up over years or something. Yeah. But it was a lot. And I think it's because he fits the model in that way. Like they're not super pressy right now, but you still need, like, when the ball's in front of you, you still need to get there. You're still going to have those triggers. So you don't have to press like just in front of the opponent's box, but as soon as they cross that halfway line, you know, that's where their block is, and that's where you're going to face that line of confrontation. So I think being able to cover ground was probably the biggest asset that they saw him, and they didn't, if they they knew what Cincinnati was like at the time, they're like, we shouldn't look at those numbers because those are so team dependent. And I think that may be part of it, is how much of G plus is team dependent. We really aren't sure yet.
Yeah, that's the team strength.
That's great. That's a great shout, man.
The team strength effects in G plus can be pretty gnarly, and that's where stuff like G plus boost is really interesting. Mm-hmm. And net G plus, like Mike's article this summer, can be really, really illuminating. Ben, what is your going to persist small sample size thing?
So I'm going to one of our absolute favorite hobby horses at ASA. So I'm looking at the team goal added difference, and at the top we've got Cincinnati at nearly three goals added difference, and second to last is Nashville at -3.62.
Oh wow!
And at last we've got Austin FC at a whopping -0.1.
Yes,
0.1. What are we doing?
Sorry, did you say minus six?
-6.1 goal out of differential, so after five games.
I'm going to add some context here just for like people who are maybe not in the weeds of the models. Goals added roughly comes in at like three quarters of an expected goal. So like one expected goal is roughly three quarters of a G plus. I think that's roughly the conversion. For you to be a -6 G plus team in six games, you are a USL team, maybe.
I mean,
they might lose to their next pro team.
I've no idea. Like, so their offensive goals added is only at 2.57. That is half a goal below Houston, which is at 3.05 for the next Lovely. One. Their goals added against is third worst, just behind Miami and New England. And it's pretty good. You know, it's 9.24 for Miami and 8.67 for Austin.
So I
just
ask
like
you,
the
Ben,
worst in both categories.
So I ask you, as a team with the worst G plus four in the whole league, aren't you happy that you're paying Sebastian Driussi $10 million? Aren't you happy that he had a one hot finishing season and you paid him like he's Messi?
Yeah.
Pretty great.
It's pretty rough down there, I think.
Okay, it's really fun to bask in the glory of that moment. But let's set that aside for like 50 seconds and just think how bad the rest of that team has to be on top of him.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Right. So like it's fun to kick that horse. Like I love kicking that horse.
Well, I feel
there's so many bad components. Like they're bringing, like, what are they doing? What, like the entire attack, what are they doing?
So yeah, I was about to get to that from my fandom perspective, which is, you know, 2022 Rapids, kind of unlucky, kind of had a good offense. Who were the starting attackers? Giassi Zardes and Rubio. And they were on the wrong side of 30 right around then and about to decline. And now we're 2 years later and they are the starting attackers for Austin FC. And like, so, you know, they were, I respect to those two. You put in hard work for my club, but Austin, what the hell are you doing?
So I have two questions. So one, I thought that Austin actually might figure some stuff out this year because Rodolfo Borrell, who is their like director of football, basically said like, hey, this team was not that good the year they came second, have been really, really lucky. We need to change some stuff.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh my God, this guy's like aware that they're actually not a good team. Like he's going to clean house and like do something. They didn't clean house. They didn't get rid of anybody. So I don't really know what that's about. So that's not even a question. That was just a statement. The question is, Ben, you're a Rapids fan and the Rapids have been not great. How many players, like who from Austin would you take for your team?
Because yeah, I look at TFC, who I think are like not a great team, but are doing okay. And like, I look at that team and I'm like, who would I take? No. Brad Stuver?
Gallagher. Maybe? That's the only one. Well,
yeah, Gallagher. Again, Gallagher's probably it. Gallagher's probably it.
But maybe, again, maybe like, Drewsy's been injured. Drewsy's been injured. He hasn't been able to play. So that's a huge part of it. Yes, you're playing, Jazzy Zardy's way more than what you had planned on. I don't think Rubio's still a bad player. Rubio still has some interesting stuff. He takes a lot of bad shots. But
like if he's your third worst attacker, sure. But like this is not like 5 years ago, sure.
I mean,
but like we are now at a point where like how many
Reggiani is the guy that they need to? That's the guy.
Get rid of him.
What are we doing here? How is he still here 2 years later? We knew he was terrible 2 years. Like,
no, I'll tell you why he's still here. He's still here because nobody will pay his wages, because I'm sure he makes $3 million and nobody will pay him. Oh yeah, he's on a DP.
Yeah, for sure. But that's why you have to cut ties. Like buyouts exist exactly. Yeah,
how many teams are going to eat $3 million for a player to not play for them? Like,
I mean, Matthew McConaughey's been in some good movies lately. So
the only two teams that have historically shown the appetite to like eat massive wages on buyouts are TFC and the Galaxy. Like, those are the only teams.
That's it.
Forget about that. The people I don't care about paying out of pocket wages. Mm-hmm. Anthony Precourt sits at the very top of that damn list. I don't care if he goes broke on this team. In fact, there is a part of me that hopes so badly that he does.
I don't think many pre-2016 MLS fans are going to be rooting for Austin in any.
No. And look, it's not that they, I dislike Austin, their fan base, their culture. They have some really cool things going on there. For sure. I just absolutely hate their owner. And the fact that their owner doesn't want to pay up for a mistake that was made. And it's a mistake. Let's just be clear. It was a mistake. You got a very bad player. You overpaid him way too much. You need to cut. Like, Sebastian Drewsy, he's still going to produce for you. He's going to produce. He's not going to score 20 goals. He will score 10. He will help create maybe 15 total. That's not bad. That's a plus in this league.
Yeah. They also have never really had a third DP. Like, they've had Driussi and Rigoni, and like, I think at one point, like, maybe Zardes was a DP, or like, no, Alex Ring was a DP.
Yeah, Ring was the DP.
He's not anymore, but like, I don't even know. I think it's just Rigoni and Driussi now. I don't know if they had like a striker or anything like that. I don't know. Yeah. Like, I like, whatever. TFC were terrible, but at least they tried to not be terrible.
Mm-hmm. They have a lot of opportunities to go get something that's better than Alex Ring, that's a six, that's going to be able to do stuff. They've had to bring, I mean, obviously Ring wasn't able to keep up. They've had to move him back to center back. They don't have anybody on that defensive line.
Center back has been an issue for 3 seasons. They played Kip Keller, Amro Tarek against Violette with a tree in the background a year ago, and they didn't add any center backs. They sold the center back. They sold that Johansson guy. So, like, I don't know, whatever. This is more air than that team deserves.
But, yeah, I didn't even say my perpetual. Austin are getting the spoon.
We were so ready to jump on how bad they were. Yeah, I would say that's a pretty locked in thing. Any other weird things before we get to the G+ draft results and some trivia? Anything else? Yeah, Harrison, shoot.
DC United and Montreal have basically thrown defense to the wind and are just killing it on the attack. And they are doing awesome, and they're a lot of fun. And Montreal is good, and I told you that they were going to be good. And you rolled your eyes at me. I'm going to stop up and down, but I am so excited for DC. My buddy Jay, God bless you. You are a long-suffering DC United fan, my friend. This team is really, really stinking good. Montreal, I'm honestly on the fence. DC knows what they're not good at and doesn't care and just puts everything into their attack. And they're such a fun attacking team. Like, go.
Yeah, go. Really. I was sort of thinking along those, like, you know, we have the teams and their goals added up in front of us. Top is Cincinnati. Some questions, but defensive really, really good. They're probably going to stay that way. Montreal, good, but lots of questions. DC and Red Bulls, I think, are the teams at the top that I have the least questions about. I think they're just going to be really good. And yeah. They'll probably DC. Be in the top four of the East for the rest of the season.
Yeah, who knew? Like, just having a big striker who scores goals is good.
The game model helps. I will say Lusain, I think, was the perfect hire for the game model. I've enjoyed the striker they had. So
yeah, I want to shout out DC for they posted like 10 analytics jobs today. Or this week. Yeah, they posted like a whole raft of them. So
I guess they failed to hire the one I applied to.
So it it yeah, I will
hashtag
I will
hire Ben.
Okay, here's absolutely. Hey, this is Ben's public resume. Ask questions.
My portfolio, folks.
Hey, look, teams who hire ASA people do well. I'm just putting it out there. No, so here's a hypothetical for you, Harrison, since you wanted to talk about Montreal. There is a lot of buzz about Mr. Wilfred Nancy leaving in the summer. Southampton is one. There's a few others that are maybe not public. But I'd say there's a pretty good chance he leaves in the summer. How funny would it be if Columbus just hired Laurent Courtois back?
Oh, they should.
Montreal?
They 100%
should. They would.
And
you know, Saputo would take the cash.
Yes.
That's what I was just going to say.
They'll trade two first round picks and $500K in allocation, and it'll be done deal, man. It'll be the best transfer fee for manager Saputo's ever got. Alrighty, Ben, give us the G+ draft update.
All right. We have at third place, Mr. Kieran at 0.14 Doyles.
Daniel, get out of here.
Because of Daniel. It's all his fault. If we go to the players, he has negative 2.64 goals added. Perfectly balancing out Christian Benteke. Is it?
Yeah.
I just ran this. So I think they may have corrected something in the data that got updated in my mind today. That is completely balancing out Christian Benteke, the number one G+ earner in the league right now, who Kieran also has.
perfectly balanced as all things should be
just right at that zero. Kieran, we were trying to go over average, but we'll see if Daniel can pick it up. Harrison is second at 0.59, and I am
still in the positive.
You are in the positive. Everyone's in the positive now.
I thought Daniel was still negative. No, you said positive
0.14.
I thought Daniel was doing more work than for me than when I...
I am at positive 2.29.
Oh, my God. You're running away with me. Who? Yeah. Oh, I guess Puanga.
It's early still,
a big
but
weekend.
You, Harrison has Puanga. I've got Pooj at 0.8.
Oh, yeah.
I've got Berkey at 0.83.
Kucho?
Kucho at 0.66.
Yeah, you're loving life.
That's it for me. Then I've got Brian White at 0.16. So
he just got injured too. So hopefully that's not serious. Alrighty,
when's he gonna play?
Who?
Robbie Robinson. That's what I want to know. When's he gonna play? We just got done talking about how, like, when Miami doesn't have Messi, like, they have running.
You're right. When they don't have Messi,
this is the
thing.
I really tried to do my homework of, is Robbie Robinson still a Miami player? And I was assured he was. So.
Well, like,
don't know.
I agree with your model. He's really interesting. He's a fun dude. I would like to see him play.
Yeah.
He's
I did two stages. I tried to predict minutes, and I tried to predict per minute G+.
One of those predictions did not go well.
Well, Robbie Robinson had pretty wide error bars on both of those.
And you just leaned into it. I love that. I love that. I love that so much. This is going to be another situation to where some other team comes and throws like the minimal amount. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, for like, you look at Carranza, who's up in like Philadelphia and been great for them. Like, holy crap, dude, this is going to be another situation to where some, and the worst part about this is that like Robinson's going to sit on the bench for like 3-4 years and then eventually have an opportunity somewhere, which is just, that's so bogus. That's it's really a bad taste in my mouth.
Fran, if you're listening, please do something to help my guy.
Yeah. Didn't we say like Philadelphia would trade from? Incredible. Well, perfect for a small sample size episode. That brings us to our last section. We're going to do some trivia. We haven't done trivia yet this season, right?
Mm-mm. Balls. Okay.
Well, we're going back to it. Ian had a very strong record versus Harrison. So Harrison, this is your chance for redemption to earn
fresh meat.
Yeah. You get to start at 0-0 and you're ready to go. Ben, no pressure. You're going to kill it. Alrighty, so we've got 6 questions. You can choose your question. I've also added a new format of question and that I'm very excited about. So, Ben, as the newcomer, I'm going to let you have first pick at our questions. 1 to 6, which one do you want?
1.
Alrighty, number 1. Starting off easy, the top 3 in total G-plus added so far this season are all strikers, one of whom was featured in our G-plus draft. Can you name 2 of them?
Christian Benteke. The other, correct. I believe, is Jovalich, but I could think of.
Dejan Jovalich is in the top 3. He's 3rd. 2nd is Montreal striker Matias Kokoro.
Kokoro, yeah.
Who I think is there because he won 2 penalties. So Ben, you're up 2-0.
Don't hate.
A good start to our trivia. Harrison, you're up 2-6.
Let's go 4.
Dan Jovalich. He leads the league in X points at 3.94. Sorry, X points added at 3.94 through 5 matches. So his goals have added 4 points for the LA Galaxy. Pretty huge. Over under. So Harrison, you can either set the line and have Ben guess, or you can have Ben set the line and you can guess over under. But if he gets it exactly, he gets the points. Over under, how many players added more X points through the entire 2023 season? So 3.94 points.
3.94.
Who had more than that in 2023? Are you going to set the line, Harrison, or are you going to let Ben take a crack at it?
I'll give Ben the opportunity to set the line.
All right, Ben, set the line. How many players do you think had more than 3.94 X points added through the entire 2023 season?
7.
7. Harrison, you're going to go over.
Under.
You're going to go under. Well, that's very unfortunate because the answer is 36.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Oops.
So I'm not going to lie to you. I expected the number to be really low as well. Was more than
like
a full
lot of points.
Yeah. The top X points adders are generally like 10 to 15. So you got a pretty big range into that. But 36 points through 5 games, you add more points than I think there's 400-ish MLS players who play every year. So you're in the top 10% through 5 games. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Doesn't hurt that LA coughs up a lot of goals for there to be ties broken. But
bro, I think he has 4 goals from 6 XG already. Something crazy.
Wow. Yeah. Anyways, yeah.
LA's cracked.
He's been really good. Yeah.
Yeah. 2-0. Ben holds on to his lead. Ben, what question do you want?
Let's go 6.
Alrighty. Yes, our new format of question. So here's how this is going to work. MLS journeyman striker Chad Barrett has played over 250 games across 7 MLS clubs. How many can you name? You are going to bid a number of teams. Harrison can either call you on it and say you have to name that many, or he can bid higher than you, and then you have the opportunity to call him or bid. So he has 7 total teams. How many of those do you think you can name, Mr. Chad Barrett?
Chad Barrett. 2.
All right, Harrison.
Let's start low.
Do you think he cannot name 2, or are you going to bid higher?
I think I can name 3.
All right, are you going to call him on 3, or can you name 4?
I think I can name 3. I'm gonna jump in. Yeah, that's what I'm
saying. I already bid three.
I know. I'll go four.
Ooh. All right, call it. Go. Yours.
All right. Can you name four? Go ahead, Ben.
Seattle.
That is one.
DC.
That is unfortunately incorrect. Harrison, I'll give you a crack at three. How many of the rest can you name?
Toronto.
That is one.
And then a Galaxy.
Also one. There's three of seven. How many others can we get?
I feel like San Jose.
They're also in there.
And he wasn't ever really an East Coast guy, was he? Besides Toronto? I don't remember. I don't know.
Is he in Houston?
No. So in order, Chicago Fire, which I think is his most games. Toronto, Galaxy, New England, Seattle, San Jose, New RSL.
He played RSL. You would have thought that I would have got that. I knew that there was one more. I have no memory of this.
Three games for RSL in 2017. Harrison, you take the steal on that one. 2-1. You can go up 3-2 here. As a reminder, if you get your own question correct, it's 2 points. If you steal, it's only one. Harrison, you are up. You've got 2, 3, or 5.
Go 2.
Alrighty. This player leads all of MLS in passing G plus by nearly 50% more than Lionel Messi, who is in second place. However, almost all of it comes from one pass, an assist on a 0.93 XG shot in week one. Who is it? So they assisted a tap in week one, 0.93 XG. Big, big G plus passing number.
Well, so the two that I'm probably thinking of is either DC, because Benteke, who would have assisted him.
He did have a tap in week one. I can confirm that.
Yeah, happened. I remember that. I think Jovic also had a tap in. And so it's either DC or the Galaxy. And I don't know who would have given it off to each. Puig would be the only person that I could think of, but that doesn't make sense for all of his to be locked up in that. So it's not Puig.
I'm gonna have to push you for an answer.
Yeah. Who's the other center midfielder? Who's the sixth? Who's the sixth for the Galaxy that we love? I don't know. I have no idea. I give up. Don't shoot me.
All right, Harrison. Harrison concedes after saying the six for the Galaxy, but not giving us a name. Ben, would you like to steal?
Yeah, I'll give it a shot. I don't think it's the six for the Galaxy. I think it's Click. No,
it's not Click. It is the six for the Galaxy. It's Marky Delgado. Marky Delgado plus 0.78.
That's not who I thought it was. But...
Were you thinking Brugman?
Yeah, he's still hurt,
isn't he?
Yeah. He just came back. Marky Delgado rebound, a shot, rebound, and then squared it for Jovic into an empty net for like 0.4 G plus passing or something crazy.
Insane.
Alrighty, Harrison, you squandered your opportunity. I thought you had it.
That's such a weird thing. That's X passing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Ben, yeah, number three or number five?
Let's do three.
Already riddled by poor goalkeeping for the organization's entire existence, this team leads the league in goalkeeper XG over performance this year, even if it is split across two goalkeepers. So the team, not the goalkeeper, because they've had two play.
Team have had two goalkeepers
together,
play.
Together, they've been the best by a lot.
They generally have really bad keeping.
They have indeed generally had very bad keeping. Their whole existence, bad keeping.
So that can't be that long. Gosh. Just going to go through my expansion teams. Not Miami, not Orlando, not NYCFC. They're coming back to Austin, but I don't think they're Stuver. I mean, no, Stuver's been doing okay. I'm going to say Austin.
Brad Super, historical XG beater. He is not leading the league, and their team is not leading the league in XG over
oh, you're right,
for their goalkeepers.
XG, you're right.
Because, and I don't think their second keeper has played. Harrison, would you like to steal to level it up 2-2? Two keepers playing. Historically bad goalkeeping. You may have
fire.
No, it's unfortunately not the fire. What I was going to say was you might have some extra insight because you traded
the
for
Sounders.
The only good goalkeeper this team had in Stefan Fry, who came from Toronto FC. Sean Johnson and Luka Gavron combined for +5. +5 on their XG, which
really?
Is probably not super sustainable.
No,
maybe not.
Probably explains why they're doing as well. There's a lot of reasons why they're probably sitting where they're sitting.
They were excellent.
I don't mean to trigger you.
No, they were excellent against Atlanta this weekend, so I can't complain. I do think, as a quick aside before we get to the last question, I do think Luka Gavron will be an excellent XG beater his whole career.
How old is Gavron?
23.
He's young.
He's from the same hometown as me. But he he destroyed his XG in college and was very good in X Pro. He I think will be an excellent goalkeeper. And he's been really good this year. Alrighty, last question is number 5, a little fun one. And this one is for Harrison. Through 5 games with a minimum of 5 attempts, there are 5 players who are yet to win a header. Not a shock that none of them are over 6 feet. Just name one of them.
Marky Delgado.
That was real quick. It would have been real bold of me to have 2 Marky Delgado answers. Not correct, though. So not over 6 feet tall, but they have attempted 5 headers. Ben, would you like to steal? And I mean, you've already won, but you can get the consolation 3-1.
Some garbage time goals.
Yeah. Get that sub effect.
I don't think I'm going to get this, but let's just say Diego Rubio.
Oh, can I, if he's wrong, can I get a second?
He is wrong. I'll give you both a second guess again. Harrison, go ahead.
All right.
I thought you had a name right at the
top. No, I did. And it just left my brain.
I'll say this. None of them are that short. They're not tall,
said,
but none of them are short.
You said that under 5 feet.
Under 6 feet. Under 6 feet. Hey, that's not short. Be nice to our short kings.
Look, short kings are short kings. I'm not here to...
I'll tell you their heights. 5'9", 5'11", 5'9", 5'11", 5'9". That, I should probably not say those numbers so fast.
They're the same numbers. Also, I don't believe him anyway, so...
Frankie Amaya.
No, he's definitely... I don't know if he's won a header or not, but he is not on my list of not having won a header.
All right.
The 5 names... Eric Williamson, Jacob Schaffelberg, Jonathan Osorio, Robin Laud, and Carlos Gomez of RSL. Harrison, you're a fake fan.
Wingers.
Yeah, a lot of wingers in there. And midfielders who don't jump. Well, right. Ben, you have continued Ian's legacy of putting Harrison in the trivia dumpster. Sorry, my friend. And
I think we both did pretty bad. So, Harrison, I think you're going to have some opportunities.
2-1 is a victory nonetheless.
You'll get better.
Anyways, thank you both for joining me. And thank you all for listening to the American Soccer Analysis Show. I will finish up with saying check out the Expected Own Goals podcast on the ASA feed. They're dropping their NWSL coverage. They looked at Thorns KC the first week, and then they looked at Bay Spirit and the Gospel of Croy Bethune in today's episode. And of course, if you like the show and you like the site and you like everything that ASA is doing, building a bigger tent, democratizing data, all that sort of stuff, feel free to check out our Patreon. It's 1 tier, $5 a month. You get access to the ASA Discord. There's been a lot of fun conversations in there about all the games that are going on, whether it's USA or MLS or NWSL or March Madness or whatever. Sometimes people are talking about World of Warcraft in there. It's a great time. but it really helps out the website. We make a loss on this lovely thing. So support us however you feel you wish. Anyways, that's all from us this week. We'll see you in 2 weeks with some slightly larger sample sizes. Take care and have a good evening. The people, they want to comment on the game. They'll look at possession and look at shots and all kinds of other metrics that have very little to do with heart and courage and commitment to one another. It's okay that we don't have 150 passes in 30 minutes. It's okay that we don't have 150 shots on goal. This game is about winning. It's about thinking the game. The game will have lost the plot with all this passing and shooting percentages. And if you shoot from here, you score. If you do it 12 times, well, I'ma tell you what. The stats were wrong tonight. And stats will lose to the human spirit. And commitment to one another. It's okay that we don't have 150 passes in 30 minutes. It's okay that we don't have 150 shots on goal. This game is about winning. It's about thinking the game. Human spirit. Stats will lose to the human spirit.